je vais inviter Luis à venir me rejoindre. Donc Luis Rubio, c'est un grand spécialiste des nitrogénases depuis des années. Il a fait une longue carrière, enfin il est tout jeune, hein, mais il a fait une assez longue carrière aux États-Unis, et il a été nommé prof à l'Université technique de Madrid. Il est un de ces jeunes scientifiques que la fondation Bill Gates soutient. Il est très, très bien financé par la fondation Bill Gates, et je dois noter aussi qu'il a obtenu quelque chose d'assez prestigieux, qui est l'European Research Grant Junior. Donc vous avez ces financements qui sont fournis par l'Europe, par l'European Council, Research Council, qui est extrêmement, extrêmement sélectif. Et voilà, donc Luis a obtenu donc ce succès sur ce travail nitrogénase dont il va vous parler. Voilà. Donc si vous avez quelques questions pendant qu'il y a le changement, je vous réponds. Sinon, oui. De fer, le de fer, oui. Oui, tu as. Oui.
Et hop, il inactive. Je vous demandais, est-ce qu'on peut faire aussi chimiquement ça ?
Non.
Non. Une surface dans laquelle tu mets des
étioles, par exemple.
Étioles.
Ouais.
Suffisamment espacées. On va fixer.
Ouais. C'est une bonne idée, mais. Ouais. C'est une bonne idée. Tu as parfaitement bien vu. En effet, ce processus de transfert n'était pas qu'un transfert. Il se passait en effet plein de choses qu'on n'a pas caractérisées. Si ce n'est qu'à la fin, ce qu'on voit dans IDA, c'est, je ne vais pas détailler parce qu'il y avait un spectre infrarouge très complexe, où on voit parfaitement bien les différents états redox qu'on voit dans une hydrogénase active. Mais il s'est passé en effet plein de choses. Il y a un CO qui est parti, tu as raison, et puis il y a eu aussi un CO qui est devenu pontant. Et puis, il y a eu un réarrangement de la stéréochimie sur le fer distal. Autant de caractéristiques que, synthétiquement, on n'est pas encore arrivé à faire, et qu'il y a des tas de gens, des tas de chimistes de synthèse, comme Dahrensbourg, Rauschfuss, qui expliquent que la raison pour laquelle nos complexes biomimétiques de ces binucléaires à fer ne sont pas actifs, ou pas très, très actifs, enfin, quand ils sont hors d'une protéine, c'est parce qu'ils n'ont pas ces caractéristiques-là. Donc, l'arrivée dans IDA, en effet, conduit à ces transformations, induit ces transformations. Mais on pourrait peut-être le créer en s'inspirant, en effet, de la poche où vient se fixer ce cluster qui subit ces transformations, tu as raison.
J'ai l'impression que c'est un peu spontané,
c'est-à-dire
qu'il y a
oui, l'impact d'un tiol, et tout d'un coup... Oui, absolument, tu as raison. Voilà, donc s'il n'y a pas d'autres questions, je suis vraiment très heureux d'accueillir Luis. Vous allez parfaire votre anglais en l'écoutant, parce que, si j'ai bien compris, Luis ne va pas... Ou alors peut-être en espagnol, je ne sais pas, non. Pas en espagnol.
Non,
il est OK. Luis, please. Ah, you need the microphone. Pardon. Oui.
Pas trop tirer dessus, mais... Non, c'est bon.
Merci. Bonjour à tous. This is the only French I can speak today, so I can thank Marc for inviting me here. The talk will be in English, but I decided a couple of days ago to add a short video in French in the middle of the talk. So it's a there will be a 3 minutes video in French, but the rest of the talk will be in English. Mark asked me to talk about the last advances in the biosynthesis of nitrogenase as part of this course on metal enzymes. And so I decided to organize the talk in this way. So since this is not a specialized nitrogen fixation audience, I think it would be nice if we start the talk just by putting nitrogen fixation into context, not just as a chemical process, but as a biological process. Then we will see the role of some nitrogen fixation genes and proteins in a very parallel study to what we have heard before about hydrogenase. We will see also how the nitrogenase metal clusters are synthesized in a nitrogen fixing cell. And finally, we will, as a perspective, we will try to move a little bit forward in this possibility to engineer plants to fix nitrogen by themselves. And this was first proposed in 1972. So it was proposed based on the discovery of a number of nitrogen fixing genes, but then it was too early. But many people think, I'm among them, that perhaps now, with all the knowledge we have gained in the last few years over the synthesis of nitrogenase, there is a chance that we can we could approach this with a certain probability of success. So let's start with the nitrogen fixation and the nitrogenase enzymes. So nitrogen fixation is the conversion of atmospheric nitrogen, so the nitrogen gas, into a combined nitrogen. So typically it's ammonium, but nitrate is also called fixed nitrogen, so it has to be combined nitrogen. Chemically, this can happen by putting nitrogen gas and hydrogen gas in a catalyst, in an iron catalyst, and increasing the temperature and the partial pressures of the gases a lot. So the fixation of nitrogen in this reaction is a reaction that is thermodynamically favorable, so something that can happen, but the activation energy of the reaction is extremely high. And this is due to the extremely strong nature of the triple bond of nitrogen. It's one of the, as far as I know, is one of the two hardest bonds in nature to break. The carbon monoxide and the dinitrogen would be the other one. And because of the large activation energy that you need to break this, dinitrogen is almost an inert gas. So very few reactions can actually split the nitrogen molecule. And there are a number of chemical processes to fix nitrogen, but the one that has been more broadly applied and it was more successful was this one, the Haber-Bosch process. This was developed at the beginning of the 20th century by two Germans, the chemist Haber and an engineer, Karl Bosch. And in their process, nitrogen and hydrogen were reacted over an iron catalyst. And as I said before, you need huge amounts a huge pressure of nitrogen and hydrogen for this reaction to proceed and very high temperatures. But nevertheless, the reaction works and this has been regarded as probably the most important discovery in the human history for the population of humans on Earth. So, and what I mean by this is that today, the fertilizers, the ammonia and the nitrate obtained through the Haber-Bosch process supports about one half of the human population on Earth. So the impact of this discovery is even larger than the impact of the discovery of penicillins, by Alexander Fleming. So this is a curve of population on Earth since 1750, and is a prediction up to the year 2150. And the place where this star is, there was one of the many times that scientists thought that the world or the Earth could not support the increasing human population. And there is this quote from Sir William Crookes that the world is running out of nitrogen in 1898. So there was not enough nitrogen to feed the increasing human population. In 1914 or 15, the Haber-Bosch process was invented. Haber got the Nobel Prize for this. Bosch also got a Nobel Prize. Haber is almost is also famous for killing French. So he was a German patriot, and he loved to develop gases. He himself used the gases here in France during the First World War, and he even developed the Cyclone B, and his family was assassinated with that gas because he was a Jew. So his story is really tragic in the story of a science story. Karl Bosch is not famous, but he actually developed the largest chemical company in the world. So the Haber-Bosch process has been providing nitrogen for fertilizing the crops since the early 20th century. And today, about 40 to 50% of the agricultural production would be lost if we did not use these fertilizers. Now, this is very good news, but as always, there's the other side of the coin. And here, the problem is that the fertilizers are used at a very large excess in the fields to increase crop productivity. And this is especially important in the developed countries, and we have a large amounts of contamination by nitrogen in groundwaters in the United States, in Europe, and in China. After fertilization, the excess of nitrogen leaks into the water. It goes through the rivers to the oceans. And in this picture, you can see a space photo by NASA, in which you can see the Gulf of Mexico and the exit of the Mississippi River. And in this case, the fertilizers come from fertilizing the crop fields in the Midwest of the United States. And these are algae blooms, due to the increased growth because of nitrogen fertilization. And these algae blooms result in the depletion of oxygen in the ocean and what are called dead zones, in which animal life disappears. And some of these zones are as large as the state of New Hampshire, for example. So these are huge dead zones. And you can search for pictures. China, on the Sea of China, there are huge dead zones also due to fertilization. The other problem of this fertilizers are that they consume a fairly important amount of energy. So 1% of the energy that is consumed in the world today coming from fossil fuels is spent in the Haber-Bosch process, because the hydrogen that is used in this process comes from fossil fuel. And the result is that it is estimated that about 50% of the cost of modern agriculture, when you use fertilizers, come from the use of the nitrogen phosphate potassium fertilization of the fields. And as rich countries, we can pay for this and we can contaminate the waters, but this is not always true everywhere. And there are many countries, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and in Southeast Asia, that cannot pay for the for these fertilizers, and they suffer hunger because the crop productivities are really low because they cannot fertilize the fields. So one alternative that has been proposed and studied and applied for many years has been the use of biological nitrogen fixation to complement, not always to substitute for, but to complement the chemical nitrogen fixation, and thus increasing the productivity of the crops. What is biological nitrogen fixation? So biological nitrogen fixation is the same reaction as in chemical nitrogen fixation, but in this case we don't do the reaction on an iron catalyst. We let the organisms do the reaction. Okay, these are called nitrogen fixers, and the organisms do this reaction by using an enzyme that is called nitrogenase, and we will see now the nitrogenase enzyme. So. It is important to note that only some prokaryotes are able to fix nitrogen. Prokaryotes are bacteria, mainly. So the word prokaryote means without a real nucleus. So these are very simple organisms that, in contrast to eukaryotes, like ourselves. So, as I said, there is not a single eukaryotic cell described that can fix nitrogen. Only some bacteria and some archaea bacteria, very old bacteria, are able to fix nitrogen. Most of the nitrogen fixers are free living organisms. They fix nitrogen for themselves. By doing this, they can colonize certain niches in which nitrogen is not available, and they can grow in there and compete out other organisms. Some of them have developed a very sophisticated symbiosis with eukaryotic organisms. And the most known example is that of the nodule-associated rhizobia that have a symbiosis with legumes and provide nitrogen to the legumes. So in this agricultural practice of growing legumes in the field to enrich the field with nitrogen, in reality what is enriching the field are bacteria that lived associated to the legume and perform this process. So how do the nitrogenases look like? Well, this is a very simplified cartoon of a nitrogenase enzyme. So nitrogenases are a family of proteins, and there are three very well described nitrogenases that are similar, that are called the molybdenum, vanadium, or iron-only nitrogenases. And then there is a fourth nitrogenase that is not very well described, and I will not talk about that today. In all cases of these three type of nitrogenase in this family, the enzymes are two-component enzymes. So we have what we call the component one, or the nitrogenase, which is is a heterotetramer with a structure alpha 2 beta 2, two different polypeptides. They are encoded by the NIF D and K genes. NIF stands for nitrogen fixation. And then we have the second component of nitrogenase. It's called the component 2, or the nitrogenase reductase, and is encoded by the NIF H gene, and is a homodimer. These protein components are both metalloenzymes. They both require metal clusters for nitrogen fixation activity, and they are both extremely sensitive to oxygen, to the point that if we let this protein on open, you know, near 21% oxygen for 30 seconds, it will die. I mean, the half-life is less than 30 seconds, so in a few minutes it will go away, the activity. In all cases, the activity of nitrogenases can be written like in this equation, in which you have the nitrogen gas that has to be reduced with electrons and protons, and this reaction requires a lot of energy. In the case of the Haber-Bosch process, we have the energy by increasing the temperature, And here in the cell, we have to hydrolyze magnesium ATP, with which, as you know, is the energy currency of the cell. So nitrogenase would need at least 2 magnesium ATP molecules to be hydrolyzed per electron to be transferred in this reaction. And this is by far the best scenario for a nitrogen fixation process. Normally, is less efficient. You can go up to 32 molecules of ATP per the nitrogen reduced. This is the structure of nitrogenase. This is a nitrogenase complex in which you can see here in the middle component 1 with an alpha 2 beta 2 heterotetramer, and then two molecules of component 2, two homodimers. So this is a symmetric enzyme. The axis of symmetry would go here, and I have made transparent one half of the enzyme so that you can see the prosthetic groups and the cofactors that are bound by this enzyme. So this enzyme, each half of this enzyme works almost independently, both in activity, you know, when they work, and even when they are mature in the cell. So it's fairly independent. In here, by following the cofactors or the prosthetic groups, you can see the relative positioning of the iron sulfur clusters in the two components, and the molecules of magnesium ATP. And the electron flux will go from the simple 4 iron 4 sulfur cluster of the NIF-H component to a complex cluster on the catalytic component, on the NIF-DK, and which is called P cluster, and from here to the iron molybdenum cofactor, which is called FIMOCO. And FIMOCO is at the active site of the enzyme. This is where the nitrogen gets reduced. And one aspect of this enzyme that I didn't mention before is that in its activity, it does not only produce ammonia, it produces hydrogen, and this is a parasitic activity, the reduction of protons to produce hydrogen, and there is no way this activity can disappear from the enzyme. So nobody knows why this enzyme reduces protons, but the activity is is there, and if something goes wrong in reducing nitrogen, for example, the flux of electrons is not fast enough, what will happen is that the enzyme will place the electrons into protons and evolve hydrogen. Okay? And this also has a biotechnological application in the production of hydrogen by organisms that use nitrogenase. So let's take a quick look to the nitrogen fixation genes and proteins. And as I said before, you can divide nitrogen fixers into two classes of organisms, the nodule-associated and the free-living. And of course, in order to do biochemical experiments, the free-living organisms are much easier to work with because you can grow them to higher densities, you can isolate large amount of proteins, and they work as models. And we use mainly this guy here, the Azotobacter vinelandiae, which is a wonderful bacterium. It's a bacillus. Here is the microscopy, like a scanning electron microscopy of Azotobacter dividing. And this bacterium has certain properties that make it really useful for our studies. The first one is that it produces large amounts of nitrogenase enzyme. So up to 10% of the protein can be the NIF-H decay components in this bacterium. Second is that the quality of the protein is really good compared to other bacteria. So the protein, perhaps Azotobacter does not have many proteases, but the protein is very stable here. Second property is that Azotobacter is very easy to manipulate by molecular biology methods. And this implies knockout mutants. You know, it has a wonderful system to perform homologous recombination and to replace genes in the chromosome, to express overexpress genes, etc., etc. Azotobacter is a bacterium that lives to fix nitrogen, okay? And this has certain metabolic and physiological consequences. The first one is that it contains all three nitrogenase systems that are known, the molybdenum-dependent, vanadium-dependent, and iron-only. And it's one of the few bacteria that can do this. that can fix nitrogen using all these three systems. The second property is that accumulates very large levels of intracellular molybdenum. Actually has a unique protein called the molybdenum storage protein that allows for the accumulation of these like 80 times more molybdenum that it would need to fix nitrogen at maximum activities. And this is also very unique to this bacterium. And the third one is that it is a strict aerobe, and this is very strange for a nitrogen-fixing organism. I said before that the nitrogenase is very sensitive to oxygen, and most nitrogen fixers fix nitrogen in the absence of oxygen. Okay, this guy is lives at 21% oxygen, and it requires a lot of oxygen to fix nitrogen because it uses that oxygen in aerobic respiration to obtain large amounts of ATP. So the way it protects the nitrogenase from degradation is by having the highest known respiration rate. It consumes oxygen at the membrane, and the intracellular, the cytoplasm of the cell is basically anoxic. So Azotobacter has 60 to 70 genes devoted to directly devoted to nitrogen fixation. I have removed most of them from this slide, but I have left in the slide what is important for the rest of the talk, and is that the two regions in the chromosome of Azotobacter vinelandiae that contain most of the NIF genes are called the major NIF cluster and the minor NIF cluster. And in this region, there are a number of genes. There are some genes here that I have deleted for the purpose of clarity and here, but there are a number of genes that are involved in nitrogen fixation. And so let's now describe a little bit what they do. There is a pair of genes here called NIF-L and NIF-A that have been extensively studied at Norwich by the group of Ray Dixon. And these are regulatory genes. NIF-A is a transcriptional activator that activates expression of nitrogen-fixing genes. And NIF-L is a flavor protein that senses the environmental conditions. So environmental conditions have to be perfect for nitrogen fixation, which means there shouldn't be oxygen stress. There should be enough energy available because the nitrogenase spends a lot of energy. And there should not be ammonium in the medium because in that case, they would use up the ammonium instead of fixing it from the air. So in good conditions, as I said, NIF-A would activate the expression of the other genes. And among the other genes, we have the most important genes of the cluster, of course, are the structural genes for nitrogenase, NIF-H, NIF-D, and NIF-K, which encode for the components of the enzyme. But then we have a number of genes required to assemble the metal clusters. And in these genes, we have NIF-U and NIF-S. These are homologs to the ISCU and ISCS, or ISC-U and ISC-S. That are involved in the synthesis of simple iron sulfur clusters in many organisms. And as far as I know, actually, those machinery were discovered, starting by the discovery of the NIF-U and NIF-S genes in Azotobacter vinelandiae. So these are involved in the synthesis of this cluster for NIF-H. Then we have the P cluster of the other component of nitrogenase. To synthesize this, the bacterium needs NIF-U and NIF-S, and it also needs the structural genes of nitrogenase that will act as a scaffold. So this cluster is synthesized in situ in the nitrogenase enzyme. Okay. And finally, to synthesize FIMOCO, which is the active site of the enzyme, as you can see here, FIMOCO is a very complex cofactor, and there are at least 10 or 12 genes required to synthesize this cofactor, starting again from NIF-U and NIF-S. And I have to say here that FIMOCO is synthesized outside of the nitrogenase protein and then it is inserted into the APO protein in a very similar fashion as with the hydrogenase enzyme. So how do we work in the lab? In order to do the biochemistry to study the biochemistry of this process, of this methylation process, we have to grow large amounts of cells. We usually use large-scale fermenters, 200-300 liter fermenters, either professional or homemade, depending on the availability. Then we collect the cells and break them under anaerobic conditions, and then we work with the extracts and separate the proteins of interest either on anaerobic glove boxes or using slank lines. And this, for example, is a fractionation of Nasotobacter vinelandiae extract just by ion exchange chromatography. And you can see here the amount of fractions that have very dark, deep brown color in Nasotobacter, and this is due to the large amount of iron sulfur proteins in this bacterium. Not only the nitrogenase proteins, but other proteins required for mature nitrogenase or to, you know, to respire on the membranes, a lot of cytochromes, too, a lot of flavins. So, so we take those extracts normally to our glove boxes. We have different type of glove boxes to work in the lab. And so I think, so I brought a short video with two colleagues that will explain to you what they do with the proteins in the glove boxes. So by using, I didn't understand what they were saying, but I hope it was good. By using these techniques, we were able to purify all the proteins that are required to synthesize an active nitrogenase in the cell. And as you have seen many times before, I guess, is well, this is the nature in gel, you know, to separate purified proteins, staying with COMASI. And for example, here in lane number one, you can see the component one, two of nitrogenase, the NIF-H protein. In lane number two, you can see the other component of nitrogenase is two proteins, NIF-D and NIF-K here. When the component one of nitrogenase, when NIF-DK lack FIMOCO, the iron molybdenum cofactor, it is actually being synthesized and it accumulates in the cell, but it accumulates in an APO form with no FIMOCO. It contains the P cluster, the other cluster, but it contains no FIMOCO. And in that case, as you will see later, it comes associated with a SERP subunit, which is a chaperone that keeps the protein in a stable form. Okay? It's called NAVY here. You can see also the NAVY isolated here in another sample, and well, and so on. And many of the samples have colors. They're very nice to purify, and they have colors because they contain iron sulfur clusters, and of different nature. For example, NIF-B contains a SAM radical cluster. It's very similar to Bio-B, as Mark mentioned before. We have NIF-Q, which is unique also in nature. We found that NIF-Q was the protein that contains a 3-iron-4-sulfur-1-molybdenum atom cluster, and it is it was involved in the transfer of molybdenum to other clusters. Then we have the standard NIF-U and NIF-S proteins. NIF-S contains flavin, sorry, PLP, that's why it's yellow, and et cetera. You can see here, for example, the difference in color. These are about the same concentration of proteins here in this tube and this. And you can see the difference in color from APO-NIF-DK and the HOLO-NIF-DK protein. And this difference is due to the fact that this one contains FIMOCO and this one only contains the P clusters. So how do we study the biosynthesis of these clusters? So let's go very quickly over what these clusters look like. This is the simple 4-iron-4-sulfur cluster of the NIF-H component. This is what everybody calls a simple iron-sulfur cluster. In this case, the activity of this cluster is to transfer electrons that are required to fix nitrogen, and this is actually the main role of these clusters in biology. There are 5 or 6 roles of simple iron sulfur clusters in biology, but this is the main one. It has nothing special, so it's identical to other 4-iron-4-sulfur clusters that are widespread in nature doing many functions. Now the story changes on the NIF-DK component of nitrogenase. We have what we call complex clusters, like in the hydrogenase enzyme. And in this case, these two guys are nitrogenase specific. You would not find these clusters anywhere else in other type of enzymes. The role of the P cluster is to transfer electrons to FIMOCO. And the role of Himoko is to reduce the nitrogen. And as you can see here, the peak cluster is actually not that complex. It's made by two 4-iron, 4-sulfur cluster units that have been condensed and with the release of one sulfur atom. So there is a Mu6 bridging sulfur in the middle of the cluster. But you can, you know, you can predict that the biosynthesis of this cluster is actually going to happen by the condensation of the two units. The case of Himoko is much more complex. This is a 7-iron, 9-sulfur, 1-carbon, 1-molybdenum, and 1-homocitrate cluster. And you can try to see here two kinds of symmetries. For example, you could look at this as if they were two 4-iron, 3-sulfur, 1-carbon subunits, one here and one here, sharing a central carbon atom, okay, and three bridging sulfurs, plus the homocitrate. Or you could see this as a symmetric 6-iron core that binds symmetrically a central carbon atom here, okay, and that is capped by two external metal atoms, in this case iron and molybdenum, and in the case of the other nitrogenases, iron and vanadium, or iron and iron. So you can look at this from those two perspectives, and actually when you think about the biosynthesis of this cluster, you may think about it from those two perspectives as well, by synthesizing the central cage or by condensing two 4-iron, 4-sulfur, or two cubanes. Okay? Another interesting feature of this cluster is the presence of this carbide in the middle, which is unique in nature, and as has been shown a few months ago that this came from S-adenosyl methionine. So let's go very fast, or very quickly, through the synthesis of these simple 4-iron, 4-sulfur units for the nitrogenase system. This work was done mainly by Dennis Dean and Mike Johnson and co-workers in the United States. And this is a very simplified cartoon of the whole process. But in the nitrogenase system, you would need NIF-U and NIF-S to synthesize these clusters. And the role of NIF-S is extraction of sulfur atom from cysteine. So it's a cysteine desulfurase. It's a dimer, and it has an active cysteine. In the case of Sassotobacter, it's cysteine 3-5. And this cysteine can form a persulfide bond by extracting the sulfur from L-cysteine substrate and converting it to alanine. Now, this aftic site is at the very mobile loop of the protein, and it will donate sulfur for other processes. And in this case, it will donate sulfur to the NIF-U protein to generate iron sulfur clusters. Now, NIF-U is very interesting. It's what we call a molecular scaffold. It's a protein that does nothing but stands there, you know, stand there to receive a cluster and to assemble, you know, you use the protein to assemble the cluster, but it does not have a catalytic activity. So it's a molecular scaffold. In this case, for simple iron sulfur clusters, there is an iron donor, which is unknown in the case of the nitrogen system, and there is the sulfur donor, that is the NIF-S protein, and the cluster synthesis starts with the synthesis of a simple 2-iron, 2-sulfur cluster. If the process continues, you can have two units of 2-iron, 2-sulfur clusters. And then if the process continues and there is an electron, an additional electron donation, the synthesis of a 4-iron, 4-sulfur cluster takes place. These guys have followed this by a number of spectroscopic techniques. It's well established. Now, this cluster here on NIF-U protein is not a stable 4-iron, 4-sulfur cluster. So this is not a standard all cysteinyl ligation. It's a less stable ligation. And the reason is that the clusters will not stay here forever. They will be transferred to apoproteins. In this case, I've chosen the aponif-H protein, which will be converted into a holonif-H protein. And this has been shown in vitro and in vivo by these groups. Now, for the second cluster of nitrogenase, the P cluster, as I said before, the P cluster synthesis occurs in situ, in the NIF decay component. And this is the course of events that it is believed to happen. The NIF decay protein, the polypeptides, are synthesized, And if you and if as machinery will insert 2 4 iron 4 sulfur subunits at the interface of the D and K polypeptides. Okay. Now this type of enzyme has been isolated and characterized. Okay, so it exists. This one has not been isolated. So it's a complete speculation. Now by the action of the other component of nitrogenase and an additional chaperone, these 2 pairs of 4 iron 4 sulfur clusters are condensed into a P cluster. And the mechanism by which that reaction happens is not known, but what is known is that these 2 proteins have to interact with the nib decay protein, and that upon the formation of the P clusters, the protein undergoes a large conformational change, and then the FIMOCO binding sites are open. So this means that P cluster synthesis is a prerequisite for FIMOCO insertion. You cannot insert FIMOCO here. Okay? The sites have to be open. And these sites, this opening of the sites is not stable, and it is stabilized by this chaperone that I showed before in the gel, the NAV-Y chaperone that will bind to the NIFD subunits, presumably stabilizing this open conformation and allowing for FIMOCO insertion. So in these conditions, you can add isolated FIMOCO, for example, we can isolate it in the lab and add it to the reaction, or the cell can provide FIMOCO. And it will bind to the open sites. There will be a conformational change, and you will have the hollow protein, which is completely active protein. Okay. Now, as for the FIMOCO biosynthesis, and this is a much more complex process, and I'm not going to show all the results, I will just select a few experiments that, you know, to show you how we work in the lab. And those experiments led us to this model for the biosynthesis of FIMOCO. And at first sight, it seems very complex, but it's not that complex. You can see here in the model that there is a central node for FIMOCO synthesis, which is called the NIFN-NIFH complex. And in this node, or to this node, you have 3 branches that converge. You have the iron sulfur core branch, you have the homocitrate branch, and you have the molybdenum branch. And these branches provide the building blocks to build FIMOCO. So what is in the central core? Well, there is a NIF-EN heterotetramer, which is a homolog to nitrogenase. So during evolution, nitrogenase genes duplicated, and in the duplication, 2 of the genes specialized in the synthesis of FIMOCO, and the other 2 genes specialized in making the nitrogen fixing reaction, but they are very similar in structure. And due to this similarity, the NIF-EN complex can interact with NIFH, and it is supposed to interact in a very similar manner as NIFH would interact with the nitrogenase enzyme in the mature enzyme. So on the branch of iron sulfur cluster biosynthesis, we have again the NIF-EN and NIF-S components to build the simple iron sulfur blocks. And then we have a very interesting protein, which is NIF-B, is a sun radical protein. And this protein is specific for nitrogen fixation. Okay? And all nitrogenases depend on the activity of this protein, all 3 classes of nitrogenases. And it catalyzes perhaps the more specialized reaction in the whole pathway, which is the formation of NIF-BICO. I will show the possible structure of NIF-BICO now. So once NIF-BICO has been formed, it is transferred to a carrier protein that in turn will transfer it to the central complex. On the other branch, we have molybdenum that will be transferred from the NIF-Q protein, and homocitrate that will be transferred from the NIF-V protein. The FIMOCO factor will be assembled in the central node by putting together all 3 pieces, and you can actually observe the formation of FIMOCO in this node by using spectroscopic techniques, and FIMOCO will exit this protein and will be inserted into active NIF decay protein by means of the NAV-Y protein. So NAV-Y is not only a chaperone to hold this apoprotein open, as you saw before, but it's also an insertase of FIMOCO, so it's at both ends of the process. So functionally, we can divide the players reaction. We can divide them in enzymes. For example, we have a cysteine, the sulfurase here. we have a homocitrate synthase here that, so it's basically just an enzyme. We have molecular scaffolds. What these proteins do is that they stand there so that the clusters are being made. And as all classifications, this classification is leaky. For example, NIFB is also an enzyme. It's a some radical enzyme, but it works as a scaffold too. So in this case, we have NIFU, NIFI, NIFN, and NIFQ. So all the precursors to make FIMOCO are synthesized in these scaffolds. Okay? But now remember that FIMOCO, nitrogenase, and all the precursors are very sensitive to oxygen. And in the case of FIMOCO, it is even sensitive to protons. So you cannot just, you know, move FIMOCO around in the cytoplasm of the cells. All these precursors are always bound to proteins. So we have these two carriers that are shuttles of complexes, of metal complexes between the assembly points. And here by the ROMs, what I've tried to show is the complexity of the cluster from simple to very complex in FIMOCO. These are the proposed structure of all those clusters. We have these for iron for sulfur clusters. This has been crystallized and is well known. The FIMOCO has also been crystallized and is well known. We do not have crystal structures of these two guys, but there are a number of spectroscopic techniques that tell us that this is the most likely structure. You can see here that NIFBICO is actually a very strange cluster that contains at least the central six iron one carbon cage of FIMOCO. Okay? It may be larger, but at least this is for sure containing NIFBICO. And one of the techniques that we use to look at these clusters is we have collaborations with spectroscopists in the United States, and this is from the group of Kramer and Simon George, and what we do is that we can isolate these precursors, we can isolate NIFBICO or the BK cluster, another precursor, we can isolate FIMOCO, put them in the carrier proteins, which stabilize the clusters, concentrate those clusters, and give them to our colleagues, and they run a number of experiments. And in this case, this is a simple EXAFS, iron EXAFS, in which they are looking at the distance of iron with reflections of iron with other atoms that are in the surroundings. And what is important here is that if you look at the iron excess of all four samples, they are very similar. And the reason is that this peak corresponds to iron-sulfur interactions. This is iron-iron interactions at 2.7. And this peak here is particularly important. It's 3.7 angstroms, and this is the one that actually depends on the iron-iron interaction across the central cage. So this is a direct demonstration that the central cage of FIMOCO exists at the level of NIFBICO already. That is not just two for iron for sulfur units separated. Okay? It was present at the level of NIFBICO. It is maintained at the level of the VK cluster and at the level of FIMOCO. Here, on the red, this is not a very good fitting, and on the red, line, which is the actual data, you can see a peak at 1.8 angstroms in all the clusters, and this corresponds actually to the interaction of iron with the central atom, with the carbon. It was not fitted in this curve, but this was one of the first visualization of the interaction of the iron with the central carbon. So another type of experiments that we do is we reconstitute nitrogenase. So we take all the components apart, we purify all the components, and then we put them back together and follow the pathway. And that's how we reconstituted the pathway in the first place. So in this sample, we have here all these are purified proteins. We have here this protein from the central node, NIFN, and we added NIFBICO, isolated NIFBICO, and we wanted to convert it into FIMOCO. Okay, and this is what we were saying here. What are the requirements to convert NIFBICO into FIMOCO? And for that, we add a source of electrons, a source of molybdenum, NIFH, and a source of homocitrate, expecting that we will have FIMOCO. Then we add purified APOD NIF decay, FIMOCO will be inserted. And then we add more NIFH to determine activity. And the activity that we measure here is we can measure hydrogen production, ammonia production, or typically ethylene production, because nitrogenase also reduces acetylene into ethylene, and that is very, very fast and easy to determine. So for standard assays, we use the acetylene reduction assay, and then for more interesting things, we use the ammonia assay. And in this case, what we could conclude was that NIFBICO by itself, I mean the isolated cluster, would satisfy the NIFB requirement for fimocosynthesis, meaning that the only role of NIFB in the biosynthesis of fimoco is to synthesize NIFBICO. If you have NIFBICO and you provide it to the machinery, you don't need NIFB anymore. So there's no other product of NIFB than NIFBICO. And you can see here the control reaction in which you have activated nitrogenase by adding here NIFB instead of NIFBICO. If you remove NIFB, there's no activity. If you remove NIFB but add the product of NIFB, the isolated product, NIFBICO, you will have full activity, and in the absence of both, you will have no activity. Another sort of assays that we run is that we use molecular biology to answer certain complex questions, like this one. This one, well, the question was very simple. The answer was not that simple. The question is, are NIFU and NIFES providing the building blocks for fimocosynthesis? Okay, and this was a hypothesis that was widely accepted since the early 90s. But there was really no demonstration. I mean, NIFU and NIFES are required for all proteins in the nitrogenase system. So how are you going to determine whether they are giving the building blocks to make fimoco specifically? And the problem here in this case is that if we assay for the presence of fimoco, NIFU and NIFES are actually required to build the, you know, structural clusters for NIFM, for NIFH, even some other clusters for NIFB. So you wouldn't know if they are required to make fimoco. So we generated a mutant that lacked this central complex, and in this case, we decided to isolate NIFB and NIFBICO and answer the question. So, by making that mutant, since the pathway cannot proceed to fimoco, you will have NIFBICO accumulation in the cell, and this is what is shown here. This is the level, in a relative way, the level of NIFBICO accumulation in a delta NIFM mutant that cannot make fimoco. And this accumulation disappears when you delete NIFU, NIFES, or both genes. Now, you can make a genetic complementation and put those genes back into a vector and express them under another promoter. We use here an IPTG-inducible promoter, okay? A LAC promoter. And in that case, when you place the genes in a plasmid, you could have back the NIFBICO accumulation, meaning that the effect was actually due to the deletion of those genes into the chromosome. Now there's still one question to answer here, and is that, well, okay, this is not due to lack of clusters on NIFN and NIFH, but what about NIFB? NIFB is also an iron sulfur protein. So are you keeping an active NIFB and then not having the building blocks for NIFBICO? So we purified NIFB, and we found that the iron content in the wild type and in the delta NIFUS mutant was very similar, and the specific activity of the protein was again very similar. So you can make NIFB at reasonable levels in the absence of NIFU and NIFES and its active NIFB. What you cannot make is a good amount of NIFBICO for nitrogenase biosynthesis. So this answers the question, and yes, NIFU and NIFES are giving the building blocks for fimoco. So we have them at the base of all three synthetic clusters. Okay, so all three clusters, the 4-iron, 4-sulfur, the P cluster, and fimoco. Other type of questions that we answer in the lab is, for example, this transfer of clusters between assembly points and carrier proteins. And this is another view of the pathway. You have the central node here with NIFN and NIFH, and then the three branches are this, this, and this. Okay? So in this case, what we were asking was for the transfer of NIFBICO from NIFX to the scaffold protein NIFN. And how do we assay this? Well, we isolate both of the proteins. We isolate NIFX, NIFBICO, and we isolate NIFN with no NIFBICO. And we put them together, and we separate them on a native gel, in which proteins run separately under anoxic conditions, and then we stain the gels with specific antibodies for protein or for iron. In this case, you can see one for iron. And you can see in this line here, the iron staining of the delta NIFB NIFN protein, which is the protein that does not have NIFBICO. You can see a tiny amount of iron here, which is due to these permanent clusters, but no more iron in this protein. NIFX alone has no iron in this line number two. If you add the NIFX NIFBICO complex, it will run here and it has a lot of iron due to NIFBICO, and if you put them together and then separate it in the gel, you can see the transfer of iron from Nifex Nifbico to the Nifien complex. And actually, you can isolate that complex and use it for phimocosynthesis, and it works. Okay. So, and by doing that experiment that I'm mentioning now, is how we discovered this intermediate in the biosynthesis of phimoco that we call the VK cluster, just by transferring Nifbico from Nifex to Nifien, and then moving again the cluster from Nifien to empty Nifex, which will bind both, and then in collaboration with Steve Kramer, determining the properties of that cluster. And we found that both are similar in exabs, and they both comprise the central core of Fimoco, that none of them have molybdenum or homocitrate, and that they have similar but not identical geometries. But what was more important was that they were very different at the EPR. Nifbico is always EPR silent, it's actually diamagnetic. And the VK cluster is paramagnetic, both in the reduced and the oxidized state, and they undergo two electron transitions. So these are different clusters. I'm going to skip this one. So the question is now, is it possible to engineer plants to fix nitrogen by themselves with all the things that we have learned in the recent years? And I'm taking this phylogenetical tree from the Brock, in which you can see the domains of bacteria, archaea, and eukarya. And no single eukarya have nitrogen fixing organisms. Some bacteria have them, in the cyanobacteria, for example, or in the proteobacteria. Some archaea have them on the methanobacteria, etc. But no single eukaryotic organism are nitrogen fixer. So what would be the problem with plants? Plants produce oxygen during the photosynthesis, and you just heard that the nitrogenase is extremely sensitive to oxygen. So these two processes are not compatible in a photosynthetically active plant. So the question is, can we transfer these genes? In contrast to other techniques, like to make maize or rice nodulate, and that has been tried by other groups, what we propose is the direct transfer of nitrogen fixing genes into the plants, because this will go into the germ line of the plant. I mean, you will have a seed that will develop a plant that is able to fix nitrogen. So the first thing that you have to approach is, where in the plant? Are you going to express these genes in the cytoplasm or in an organelle? And one would choose an organelle because of these properties. Both organelles, chloroplast and mitochondria, have energy at large amounts. I mean, in mitochondria, you have energy because of respiration, and in chloroplasts, you have energy because of photophosphorylation. Okay, you have a lot of ATP. There is a lot of reducing power available, and remember that the nitrogenase needs a lot of electrons to reduce the nitrogen. And the differences start here. In the chloroplast, it is possible to introduce bacterial genes. It has been shown for many plants. This is not true for all crops, but it's certainly easier than in mitochondria, which has been shown not genetically amenable in plants. Both organelles can provide iron sulfur clusters needed for nitrogenase biosynthesis. So both would make iron sulfur clusters of the simple state. Note, so there's a difference between both machineries, but both in principle can provide these clusters. The chloroplast has large amounts of oxygen, and not only oxygen reactive species due to the photosynthesis, whereas the mitochondria consumes oxygen through respiration, and this is very similar to the case of Azotobacter vinilandiae, which is, as you remember, an strict aerobe that would consume oxygen in the membrane. So this is what would happen in mitochondria. And therefore, the oxygen levels at the chloroplast are very high, and at the mitochondria are very low. So in principle, we would think that the mitochondrion is the preferred organelle to express nitrogenase. So how many genes? Okay, we have many genes. The ones in color here, we have seen them in the biosynthetic pathway. How many genes? So in principle, it seems an extremely complex process, but the key experiment for this, I'm gonna skip this, is just to say that these clusters are synthesizing plants and these are not synthesizing plants. So the goal is to synthesize this. So the experiment, the key experiment to determine how many genes would go into the plant came in this paper from our group, in which we asked the following question: can we synthesize completely from scratch from iron, sulfur, molybdenum, and homocitrate? Can we synthesize Fimoco and activate nitrogenase in the test tube outside the cell? So we have this pathway, and we decided, well, let's not add ni fio ni fes. Let's just add a source of iron and a source of sulfur. Okay. Let's remove NIFV, or well, NIFQ, and add molybdate, and NIFV and add homocitrate. Okay, so let's just remove external component. Let's remove the carriers. If they are not essential, they could be removed from the reaction. So if we have all these proteins in the purifying form and we had them, can we make Fimoco from the atomic components? And the answer was yes. So we could synthesize Fimoco in the test tube, okay, in one single step. And we could insert it into nitrogenase and generate an active nitrogenase. So the next question here was, well, what happens if we add the carriers back? And with these carriers back, the activity was double. Here it seems the same size, but the axis is double here. So the carriers help stabilize the whole biosynthetic process, but are not essential. So they can be, in principle, they can be removed from the equation. So so this is the state of the art of the laboratory nitrogenase synthesis, and is that to synthesize nitrogenase in the lab, you actually do not need the 20 or nitrogen-fixing genes that you can find in Klebsiella or the 70 genes that you can find in Sotobacter. So these guys, NIFB, NIFN, NIF, and NIFH, will perform all the basic biochemical reactions to make Fimoco. All the rest of the proteins are there to provide protection from oxygen, to provide simple iron sulfur clusters like NIFO and NIFES, to provide molybdenum or homocitrate. But the basic reactions to make Fimoco are carried out, all of them, by these three guys. Okay? And these are the essential, absolutely essential proteins. You will have no nitrogenase without those three guys. Okay, so our starting point is that these clusters can be provided by the plant because they are everywhere in the plant. The mitochondria, cytoplasm, and chloroplast. So we just have to start making Fimoco from NIBICO, which is from the activity of NIB. And this is what we are doing now. We are choosing NIB genes from non-strict anaerobes. Actually, we are using Azotobacter vinelandiae genes. We change codon preference to make them look more like eukaryotic genes. And we incorporate the nitrogen fixation proteins into organelles, and this is going well, actually. So they are getting into the organelles. And then we can check the functionality of each step in nitrogenase biosynthesis, and remember that assay in which we could just put several components and look for fimocosynthesis. So we can look for the synthesis of NIBICO, or for the synthesis of the BK cluster, or for the synthesis of Fimoco. We can just check any individual step. And of course, we can troubleshoot and try alternative avenues on each step. Half of my lab is actually working on this at this point, and it's being funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that, as you know, has a large compromise to fight hunger in the developing world. And with this, and the picture is not recent. This is my group, and the people in blue are here in the picture, and in gray is, well, we need to take another picture. Basically, there's more people that is working on the Gates project that is not here, and I thank you for your attention.